This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
What's your greatest well-I'm moment? Story one. Just a few days ago, it was my first time going rafting, and my group and I were about to get in the raft. All the instructors kept saying, "Wow, this is the roughest water I've seen in 7 years." No big deal. Let's go rafting. We ended up getting caught between two currents and flipping over. I was stuck under the raft for about 2 minutes until I was finally pulled out and dragged through the river until I hit a rock and climbed on top. The entire time, my only thought was, "Well, this is how I die." It turns out a woman in my group didn't make it. She hit her head underwater, lost consciousness, and sadly drowned. Story 2. This happened when I was in 7th grade. I went to a really small Catholic school, and my parents often helped out around the school on weekends. So I was frequently there, in an almost empty school with nothing much to do. For some reason, I had a very different locker than most of the other kids. Mine was really short but very wide. I had always wondered if I could fit inside it. I figured this was a good time to find out. With nobody around to see me finally solve this ridiculous mystery. So I got inside and was kind of scrunched in there. Then the door shut on me. I tried to use my fingers to open the latch from the inside, but I couldn't do it. I had locked myself inside my own locker. Probably 20 minutes later, my dad and another adult family friend came along, and I started pounding on the door. They laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. You know what? I'll just let you know when they stop laughing. But it's been 14 years, so I'm not sure that's going to happen anytime soon. Story 3. I lost too much blood during brain surgery number 2 after a 16-hour operation and had to undergo an emergency transfusion. Then I spiked a fever of 103 when I woke up, which wouldn't go down and nearly cost me my life. I was so out of it, I don't even remember going through that ordeal, just the pain. The surgery and tumor also caused throat paralysis in such a way that I could no longer swallow food or keep it from going into my lungs. That meant I couldn't eat or drink. IVs kept me hydrated. But I couldn't have a PEG tube surgically placed for nutrition because I had just undergone major brain surgery and my body wouldn't be able to handle the stress of another procedure. The doctors told my father this, and he burst into tears saying, "They just killed my son." For the first time since I woke up from the operation, I sat up in bed, pointed to my father and said, "I'll live through this." So it became a race. Could I heal fast enough to have the feeding tube implanted before I starved to death? I went 14 days without food and lost 70 pounds. I now know what it truly means to starve. Of course, it didn't matter in the end because they discovered the tumor was still growing. I had to undergo 30 days of intense radiation to try to stop it. This was on top of physical therapy,
as I was too weak from the weight loss, and the radiation was also draining my strength. When I finally finished, I could walk, but I couldn't get up from a seated position because my knees were too weak. It took me 6 months to be cleared to return to work, and I still live with the fear that the tumor might return. Oh, and if you think this ended happily ever after, 3 months after I returned to the job I had for 11 years, the company filed for bankruptcy, shut down, and I was laid off. I've been struggling to find work since, but people won't hire me. I work in computer support, face-to-face, and my facial paralysis has led many to pass me over for interviews. But as hard as things are right now, I still look myself in the mirror and say, I'll live through this. Story 4. When I was about 15, my parents discovered my less-than-appropriate internet habits and installed an extremely strict internet blocker. I didn't even have access to YouTube again until I graduated high school. Well, I found out that I could still access the internet on my phone. It was an old flip phone from around 2003, and I was surprised it had internet access at all. I couldn't visit websites or play videos. All I could really do was get Google image results, but it was better than nothing. Until about a week later, when my father came downstairs and asked, "Hey, I just got a bill for a $50 surcharge on one of our phones. Do you know why that might be the case?" Outwardly, I said, "Nope." And he replied, "Huh. I'll have to look into it." But internally, I was panicking. Turns out there was a $1 charge every time you use the internet on that phone. So my options were basically to come clean or to let them look into it and discover the large number of image searches I had done. That was a very rough day for me, let me tell you. Story 5. About 8 years ago, my friend Drew made a rude gesture at a truck full of guys that was tailgating us. They followed us to a grocery store parking lot and got out to confront us. I sped off. I started driving fast down the road, and before I knew it, I was in a full-on car chase. My not-so-bright idea was to turn off the main road, hoping I could lose them. Nope. They cornered us in a cul-de-sac. All the guys got out of the truck, and two of them were holding bats. I was pretty sure I was about to get seriously hurt. One of them came to the window and started yelling at me, calling me names and saying how easily he could hurt me. He made me tell him that I was his, well, completely under his control. I nervously repeated it about 8 times. Then he leaned toward me, turned around, got back in his truck, and drove off. It was the scariest experience of my life. To this day, I won't even honk at someone on the road, no matter what they do. Story 6. When I was young, our old dog ran full speed into the back of my legs. As I was falling over, I had that, "Well, life was fun. This is going to hurt," moment. Then my head hit the concrete with a loud bang that my mom heard from the other side of the house. I woke up dazed and my head was throbbing. I was rushed to the hospital and told I was fine. But since that day, I've really struggled with speech. I can't pronounce words correctly. My sentences get jumbled. I have trouble staying focused. And I get splitting headaches right at the back of my head where it hit. I also have other side effects. And to this day, no doctor has been able to explain why. Edit time. For those asking, some of the other side effects include difficulty understanding people. I can hear them clearly, but the words don't make sense, and I often need them to repeat themselves 2 to 4 times. People think I'm hard of hearing, but if I can lip read, I'm fine. The headaches aren't as bad as they used to be, but they still wake me up at night. Poor sleep, not sure if it's related, but probably not. My English skills are all over the place. Trying to focus too long brings on headaches. Talking is difficult sometimes and other times not so bad. My memory has suffered. I can't remember much from before this happened and often struggle to remember things. Yet some random memories stay with me like they just happened. I also have trouble remembering names. I recognize faces but can't match them with names. Sometimes I just feel really down because I struggle to put together a proper sentence. I do things in very unconventional ways. Though that might just be my personality. Reading is painful. I mix up letters and words and it makes no sense to anyone. I read some words completely wrong and need multiple attempts or someone else to point it out. This often leaves me feeling frustrated and embarrassed. Story 7. Recently, I was moving homes and switching jobs at the same time. I was staying with my parents since it made getting to my new job 100 times easier. On the day I was moving,
I opened a letter that had been left in the flat, informing me I owed a city council £5,000. Turns out a guy I lived with for a few years hadn't been paying the bill. We had a deal. I paid for the internet and television, and he covered the council tax. He hadn't paid a single penny in all the years we lived together and lied to me who knows how many times. Now, not paying council tax is actually a crime, and my new job basically involves moving large amounts of money for people. I have never been more stressed or furious in my life. For those who care, it all got sorted because my parents are amazing. I got my ex-friend to sign a contract saying he owes them the money, and they paid it off. The council confirmed there would be no negative consequences for me, but I nearly lost the last 5 years of progress and could have ended up in a debt that would have financially destroyed me. He still goes around telling people I'm overreacting by being mad. Story 8. I was doing a grenade training exercise in Afghanistan. My platoon had the day off, so our commander scheduled a big range day for us to practice. We were using many weapons that day, including frag grenades, AT-4s, .50 cal, and Barretts. It was an exciting day because, as a standard infantryman, you rarely get to use that kind of equipment. The range had just started, and another squad got to start with AT-4s, a rocket launcher for those who don't know. I was jealous because my squad got stuck with grenades first, which was the most boring station of them all. We lined up to start lobbing them over the HESCO barriers downrange. A guy in my squad, let's call him Smith, stepped up and readied his grenade. As he threw it, the spoon caught on his sleeve. The grenade hit the top of the barrier and dropped straight down. Everyone screamed and ran for the concrete safety trench about 30 feet behind us. Everyone except me. I was next in line, so the closest to the grenade other than Smith. And as I pivoted to run, I slipped and fell about 10 to 15 feet away from the grenade. In that moment, I decided not to get back up and just thought, I'm done for.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
When grenades explode, there's a cone-shaped area just above the ground that doesn't get hit by shrapnel, and I just so happened to land in that protective zone. Those 3 seconds felt like a lifetime. The grenade exploded and completely rocked me. But somehow I was unscathed. My squad leader came running over, rolled me onto my back, yelling my name. I just looked at him and said, "Fudge." I was only shaken for about a minute and wanted to get back to shooting the big stuff. But because of the accident, the range was shut down and we didn't get to return for the rest of the deployment. Story 9. I spent a few years skydiving every weekend. On jump 17, I was solo by that point, but didn't yet have my license. Things were going smoothly. The canopy deployed, and I started thinking about my landing pattern. I looked down, checked the windsock, and made my decision. Once I committed, I noticed people landing in the opposite direction. You're supposed to land into the wind to slow your forward speed, so I wondered why they were all doing it wrong. And then I realized, oh no, this was my I'm in trouble moment. 17 jumps is like your second week of driving. You know how to steer, but you have no experience. Someone may have explained what to do, but you don't really know. So with the wind at my back, I looked down and realized I was moving fast. Like running speed fast. There was no way I could run it out.
Even rolling on landing wouldn't help much with that much momentum. I knew I was going to crash. Another I'm in trouble moment. I looked at the landing area and saw a sand pit. I said a short, non-denominational prayer and aimed for it. I made my first dramatic swoop and slammed into the sand. Nothing broken, just bruised. That's when the safety officer started yelling at me. Yup, I was in trouble. I didn't get grounded, but I did get loudly and publicly chewed out. And again later at the club meeting. Story 10. I accidentally pinned my right foot under the rear tire of my lifted Jeep while my left foot was on the brake. I was stuck in a spread eagle stance and couldn't lift my left leg over the doorframe. I held on to the steering wheel for dear life while I struggled to squirm my right foot out of the shoe for about 5 minutes. I really thought I was going to be split in half. Here's how it happened. I was pressure washing my aunt's driveway. It had a slight slope down toward the street, and I needed to grab something from the back of my Jeep, which was lifted with 35-inch tires. I only needed to move it like 3 feet. I'm 6 feet tall, so I swung my left leg in and put it on the brake while I bumped the shifter into neutral and hopped forward with my other leg. On the second hop, I was going to shift it back into park, but the rear tire caught my right foot as I was making that second hop before I could shift back. The short wheelbase got me. The tire rolled up almost to my ankle, and I was stuck in a near split, holding myself up to avoid worse damage. I couldn't even pull myself up using the steering wheel, just barely prevented myself from stretching further. So there I was, sweating and whimpering in the Florida heat, holding myself up as best I could. There's about a 4-inch rise between the floor and the door on a Wrangler, and I couldn't lift my leg over it. Couldn't lift it at all. I kept squirming, trying to get my foot free. I don't remember if I got my foot out of the shoe or pulled the shoe from under the tire. Either way, it must have looked ridiculous. My aunt was home at the time, but I knew how dumb this all was and didn't want her to find out. She was 75. She'd have needed a stepladder just to get into the Jeep anyway. To picture it, imagine a Jean-Claude Van Damme split, tilted right at a 45-degree angle, with his right foot under the back tire and his left foot stretched into the Jeep, pressing the brake. Story 11. I was 8 years old and living in an apartment complex in an area full of kids. I was outside playing with my neighbor friends when we made some sort of mess I can't quite remember. They wanted to grab my broom to clean it up, but I wouldn't let them. See, I was starting to feel like my friends were taking advantage of me. They were always eating my food, making a mess in my apartment, borrowing my toys, etc. They rarely ever reciprocated, so I decided to stand my ground and told them to grab their own broom. They got annoyed and said no, so I went to their house to grab their broom instead. Then they went and told my father. My father wasn't a very kind man to me. He had a cruel streak and often used me to manipulate or upset my mom. I was usually safe when she was home, because she always stepped in, but that day she wasn't. She had taken my little brother somewhere, leaving me alone with him. When we were alone and he felt I needed to be punished, he typically chose between two methods. He'd either find new and humiliating ways to shame me, his usual choice, or if he was drunk enough, he'd become physically abusive. So when my friend went to tell on me, I panicked. I just knew he'd use this as an excuse to punish me. I began crying and hyperventilating, which isn't good for an asthmatic child. I ran to find a hiding spot, but he saw me before I could get far. He ordered me inside. I didn't want to make things worse, so I went in. I was still crying and begging him to leave me alone. Then I smelled the alcohol on him. My friends were watching everything unfold. He closed the door and locked it behind him. I started screaming again, terrified. I feared the worst. Instead of punishing me, though, he just sat down on the couch and told me not to see my friends anymore. I don't know if it was the scene I caused, the soccer match he wanted to watch, or simply how he felt about my friends that made him decide to leave me alone that day. I didn't care. I just ran to my room and locked the door until my mom and brother came home, just in case he changed his mind. He didn't. The World Cup was on, France 98, and he wasn't going to miss that for anything. That may be why my mom thought it was safe to leave me with him for once. My friends never came near my father again after that. Apparently, my reaction scared them and their parents. They figured he wasn't someone to be around. That incident actually saved me a lot of trouble with him until he was arrested a year later. Long story. Story 12. I was backpacking with a group of friends in the mountains, and several days in,
we set up camp by a large, pristine lake. While everyone was relaxing on the shore and goofing off, I decided to swim to the other side. The water was cold, but I didn't think twice about it. Swimming pools always feel cold at first, too. I got about a quarter of the way across when I realized that this lake was way colder than any pool I'd ever been in, and the cold was draining my strength. So I turned back. I didn't know at the time that cold water could do that. Plus, I was in really good shape back then. On the way back, I quickly got to the point where I couldn't even do the crawl stroke anymore. So I switched to side stroke. When I couldn't manage that either, I flipped onto my back and tried to kick and wave my arms to get to shore. Eventually, I couldn't even do that. I was too weak to call out for help. At that point, I thought, well, I'm done for, and sort of let myself sink, thinking it was over. What I didn't realize, because I was on my back, was that I was so close to shore that I was literally just inches above the bottom. I managed to crawl and stagger out of the lake. Story 13. I went on a double date when I was 20. We took the girls to a lookout cabin in the Gatineau Hills. There wasn't much happening romantically, so me and the other guy got bored. We decided to climb down a steep hill to find a waterfall we could hear. It turned out to be only 2 feet tall. Not worth it, considering what happened next. The other guy had the bright idea to climb back up directly underneath where the girls were sitting to try and scare them. This section was basically a sheer cliff, but hey, we were 20 and felt invincible. Right near the top, my friend pointed to a rock and said, "Careful, this one's loose." He then proceeded to step on that exact rock and push himself up and over the edge. I reached the same spot, and that particular rock looked pretty useful. I assumed that if it held his weight, I could grab it for just a second. I was wrong. The rock came straight out. Everything shifted into slow motion in my head. I thought, I'm done for. 60 feet straight down. I should be dead. But instead, it's 20 years later, and I'm typing this story on a handheld supercomputer while sitting on the toilet. Life is good, kids. Story 14. Years ago, when I was a little kid, I went swimming with some friends at a remote beach in Hawaii. I got tired, so I started just treading water and kind of resting when I noticed the shore was getting farther and farther away. I had been caught in a riptide and was being pulled out to sea. I tried swimming back, but couldn't make any progress against the current. Then I looked out and saw a couple of shark fins in the distance. I started panicking, struggling even harder to reach the shore. Out of nowhere, a surfer glided up next to me and asked if I wanted a ride back. I gladly accepted. When we reached the beach, he could tell I was on the verge of crying from how scared I was. He put his arm around me and offered to buy me a snack from a nearby food truck. A guardian angel, if ever there was one. Edit. I should mention that the surfer responded after my friends asked the adults on the beach to help me. They saw I was in trouble and got worried. The surfer jumped into action and came to get me. Story 15. Back in 2000, I was in fifth or sixth grade. We had a brand new computer, and some sketchy websites had changed my browser homepage and installed toolbars. I thought I had removed them and reset the homepage the night before. The next day, while I was at school, my dad turned on the computer and the homepage had reset itself back to a questionable site with the toolbar reinstalled. When I got home, my dad told me, "We need to talk, but first I'm going to use the bathroom." While he was in there, I turned on the computer and opened Internet Explorer. Sure enough, the homepage and toolbar were back. I quickly changed the homepage and removed the toolbar. When he got out of the bathroom, he told me to open that big E again. I did, and the homepage was now Yahoo. He said, "Close it and open it again." I did. Still Yahoo. He walked away without saying anything. That entire week, I scrambled to figure out how to fix it, knowing we had just spent $2,000 on that computer. I left the computer on all week so the homepage wouldn't revert to the malware site. My parents kept trying to find a way to talk to me about it, but never did. In the end, I reformatted the PC using the original installation CD. Story 16. I was working at an animal shelter when we received a Rottweiler from a home where meth was being used and produced. The dog had been trained as an attack animal and was going through withdrawal. Needless to say, she was aggressive. An officer who brought her in went with me to place her in an isolation kennel so he could take photos for evidence or documentation. When I got her in the kennel and loosened the catch pole, she forced her way out and was now loose in the isolation room with both of us. I managed to get her to stop moving and was about to get the catch pole back around her neck. But then the officer tried to be helpful and grabbed the pole himself. She redirected her aggression and bit me on the inner thigh, shaking violently.
Thankfully, I was able to reach down, hug her neck and head tightly, and she let go. The officer managed to get the pole secured again and took me to the hospital. Now, the city cops don't pull me over anymore as a sort of unspoken apology, at least not for speeding within reason. Story 17. I've been waiting a while to share this. We had an off-site for work on the other side of the country with airfare paid for by the company. My flight was scheduled to leave on Sunday to get me there for Monday. Perfect. I woke up Monday morning to an email from a coworker. Hey man, where were you this morning? Weren't you supposed to be on my flight? What? I didn't think so. My flight was at 6:30 p.m. I checked our internal messaging system, and sure enough, our office assistant had told me it was 6:30 p.m. Crisis averted, right? Just to be safe, I checked my confirmation email. It hit me like a ton of bricks. The flight was for 6:30 a.m., and the office assistant had made a mistake. Panic mode. I packed in under 10 minutes and got an Uber to the airport. No direct flights to Charleston that would get me there in time for less than $1,200. I found a $400 flight to Atlanta that arrived at 2 a.m., and I figured I could rent a car and drive the 5 hours overnight. Total would be around $600. Problem? I had lost both my debit and credit cards at separate bars that weekend. I ended up calling my grandma. She paid for the entire thing, trusting that I'd pay her back, which I did a week later. I got to Atlanta, picked up the car, and drove from 2 a.m. to 7 a.m., just in time to check into the hotel an hour before work started at 8. One of the most stressful experiences of my life, but pulling into Charleston as the sun rose felt like reaching the promised land. Story 18. I was in Desert Storm. After my tank unit's battle, which lasted all through the night, we were allowed to rest in the morning as a different unit was going around us to pursue the retreating Republican guards. When the call came over the radio to relax our combat posture, I realized I really had to use the bathroom. So I took my HMMWV alone and drove over a few hills to find a quiet spot. I dug a small hole and started doing my business when suddenly I was surrounded by tanks, Bradleys, and attack helicopters. It was the unit that had been ordered to go around us. After about 20 minutes, the smoke and dust cleared, and I was just relieved that I hadn't been run over or mistaken for enemy and shot. But then I noticed my HMMWV tracks were gone, and I couldn't remember which direction I had come from. So I drove around in circles in the open desert between enemy and friendly lines, thinking, well, now I'm in trouble. After a few hours of circling, I stumbled upon a, thankfully, U.S. unit and walked into their tent to check the map, pretending I was from higher headquarters and needed to confirm their graphics. I eventually found my way back to my own unit, and no one even noticed I had been gone. Story 19. Took 100 micrograms of LSD and had a really important trip. I cleaned my entire house, got rid of stuff I had been putting off for almost a year, and finally laid the groundwork for my dream home. I was manic, I was sweaty, it was one of the hottest days of the year, and I was on the edge of losing it as I worked nonstop and turned my entire home upside down. At one point, I needed to get some milk from the corner store, so I grabbed my keys and change and headed out. I always pat my pockets before closing the door to make sure I have my keys. I heard the familiar metal clinks and closed the door. In that split second, I realized it wasn't my keys, just the coins. I had locked myself out in the middle of my LSD trip, sweaty, disheveled, with no phone, no ID, absolutely nothing. And then in what turned out to be one of the luckiest moments of my life, my neighbor got home from work, who just so happened to have a spare key to my place. Literally the exact second I needed him most, he appeared like a guardian angel and saved me. I ended up getting my milk just as planned, and it was absolutely delicious. Story 20. On a seasonal job in Alaska, I had the day off, so I took the bus to the nearest town, Talkeetna. It was still pretty early, and I just wanted some quiet while I fully woke up, so I walked along the beach. A loud group came by, so I walked about 10 more minutes down the shoreline and sat down. Finally, peace and quiet to clear my head and enjoy the view. I popped in my earbuds and played some music. After about 20 minutes of staring out at the landscape and listening to my iPod, I caught a whiff of something that smelled like wet dog. I figured I wasn't alone anymore and turned off the music out of courtesy. It was a chilly day, and I was bundled up in an oversized coat my grandpa had lent me for the trip. I peeked out from my hoodie,
no one to my right, and the loud group was long gone. The closest visible person looked about half a mile away. I heard a clumsy shuffle on the beach pebbles to my left, which didn't startle me, but then I heard a deep huff of breath. That's what made me jerk my head left. A bear and its cub were on the beach, not too far from me. They didn't seem to care about me, or maybe hadn't even noticed. I couldn't make myself move, and I knew standing up probably wasn't the smartest thing to do anyway. So I just sat there. After what felt like forever, but was probably around 10 minutes, I thought, forget it. Stopped staring at the bears, looked out at the view again, and put my earbuds back in. I let myself relax, listening to my music at a lower volume than usual. The wet dog smell came and went. Eventually, it faded completely. When I looked to my left, the bears were gone. Then I heard the sound of shuffling in the pebbles to my right. A tour group on horseback passed by behind me. Finally, I stood up and walked back toward town, my legs numb from sitting so long and my stomach growling. I had been on that beach for hours. Story 21. This will probably be buried, but what the heck? I was getting a tow launch of my hang glider. A tow launch is when you place your hang glider on a special cradle on the back of a pickup truck. The truck accelerates to about 25 miles per hour, and then the cradle releases the hang glider. The glider pops up into the air quickly, and the truck continues moving forward while a winch pays out a special Kevlar-based line. The glider then ascends like a kite being launched by a kid running into the wind. If the truck goes too fast or the winch pays out line too slowly, the glider gets pulled too high overhead. Just like yanking a kite string, this can cause a stall if the pilot can't compensate by pulling in on the control bar. To prevent this condition, called a lockout, there's a special piece of string between the Kevlar line and the glider called a weak link. It's designed to fail under too much tension. The Kevlar line is too strong. If it were connected directly, you'd have no way out of a lockout except with a hook knife the pilot carries to cut the line or weak link. Okay, that's the setup. I launch and begin to climb. Everything's fine until about 1,000 feet when the winch locks up. The winch operator, still in the truck, should have used his hook knife at that point, but he owned the operation and apparently valued his expensive Kevlar line more than my life. Instead, he tries yelling at the truck driver, but their radios are on different frequencies, so the driver doesn't hear him. Eventually, he breaks the back window of the truck and yells, "Stop!" But by then, it's too late. Up in the air, a third failure occurs. The weak link isn't weak. It should have broken, but didn't. I'm trying to keep the wing level and avoid a stall while reaching for my hook knife, but I'm too slow. The glider suddenly loops to the right, like a kite spinning when pulled too hard. I go around once, then return both hands to the control bar. The truck is still doing 25 miles per hour, and the winds aloft make that 35 miles per hour airspeed. Unfortunately, not at the right angle. I pull hard on the control bar, but I'm locked out again and spinning. At that exact moment, the winch operator finally gets the driver's attention and the truck stops. Mid-spin. Now I'm in a hang glider moving backward, tail first, basically a giant flapping chunk of aluminum and fabric. And I'm falling, completely stalled. At that point, I literally said aloud, "I'm gonna die." And I said it on the radio too. Apparently, my tone was so calm that someone said I sounded like I was just announcing I was going to the restroom. Somehow, the glider picked up enough airspeed to respond. I pulled the control bar into my gut and dove like a World War II bomber. About 100 feet off the ground, I was going fast enough for the wing to fly again. I pushed up, skimmed inches above the tops of a cornfield, and dropped in what would have been a textbook landing if I had been aiming for the corn. Turns out, corn is tall. I parachuted the last 8 feet or so under the wing. At some point, the winch operator came to his senses and cut the tow line. Total damage. A few hundred bucks worth of line, a bent down tube, part of the control bar, and a lost sneaker that came off in the corn. Never found it. First thing I did after realizing I was alive? Took a bathroom break. No idea why. I just had to. Then I screamed at the owner of the tow rig. Then I went home and replayed the entire thing in my head over and over. A sad epilogue. A few months later, the winch failed again. That pilot wasn't able to recover and sadly passed away. I tow launched many times afterward, but I became extremely serious about checking every detail. I even Velcroed my hook knife to my down tube. Story 22. I was maybe 10 years old.
We were visiting family and my older cousin was playing with fireworks, little black cats. Naturally, I was excited. My mom went inside with the adults but told me not to even think about touching the fireworks. I think we all know what happened next. One of them exploded in my hand. My cousin started freaking out, but I stayed surprisingly calm. "It's not that bad," I said. "Just a couple of blisters, a little blood, and whatever this black stuff is." I figured I just needed to wash it off and my mom would never know. I walked into the house, keeping my hand out of sight, and told the adults I needed to use the bathroom. I got to the sink and ran cold water over my hand. To my horror, nothing washed off. That black stuff, later I learned it was powder burns, and the blood were all under my skin. It covered pretty much the entire inside of my hand. In that moment, I knew I was in real trouble. I had to tell my mom. Story 23. I was painting a bathroom. Rather than paint around the light fixture, I decided to unfasten it from the wall to paint behind it. The plan was to let it hang from the wires, briefly, just like I had done in the other bathroom with no issues. I knew it wasn't the proper way to do it, but I did it anyway. In the other bathroom, it was a 3-bulb fixture. No big deal. In this one, it was a 9-bulb fixture, each bulb surrounded by glass. As soon as I removed the screw from the wall, the whole thing fell heavy into my supporting hand. It was way too heavy to let hang by the wires and also too heavy to hold in my outstretched arms much longer. That's when the real problem became clear. I hadn't turned off the power before unfastening the fixture. So there I was, holding an energized light fixture, unable to reattach it, unable to let go, and unable to reach the switch. And I was completely alone. Eventually, between tired arms and trying to reach for the switch, the wires stretched just enough to expose some copper. It got close enough to a metal bracket to arc. Fortunately, the circuit breaker did its job. The damage? A small scorch mark on the wall and my wounded pride. Story 24. Working as a paramedic in rural Georgia, I was taking a woman home to the projects on a Sunday. She was off the stretcher, and we were getting signatures and paperwork done when I heard a gunshot, close by. I had been a medic for less than 6 months and was only 21 years old, still brand new. I walked into an apartment and found a man face down with a gunshot wound to the back of his head. There was a spreading pool of blood about 4 to 5 feet wide beneath him. He was what we call graveyard dead. That's when I felt and actually smelled the barrel of a gun against my head and heard someone say, "Let him die." I vaguely remember responding, "He's already gone." The gun pulled away, and I heard the screen door close. They never found the person responsible. I didn't wet myself, probably just had an empty bladder. But I did feel that burning sensation of nausea and threw up in my mouth right as my partner came in, yelling for backup on the radio. From his point of view, seeing me kneeling beside the victim, it looked like I had been shot. My throwing up didn't help the illusion, but once he realized I was okay, he grabbed me by the collar and pulled me out of the house. Yup. Working as a paramedic in rural Georgia in the 90s for $40,000 a year came with all kinds of unexpected benefits. Story 25. My parents were really strict growing up, and at 16, I not only wasn't allowed to get my license, but I also couldn't ride with teen drivers, aka any of my friends. So my best friend and I were at her house and decided to drive 2 minutes down the road to Brooks for some candy and snacks. No big deal, we thought. It'll take 5 minutes and no one will know. We were literally about to check out when my stepmother walked in. Cue the "I'm in serious trouble" moment. I panicked and ducked between the aisles as my stepmother spotted my friend and started talking to her. My friend, clearly nervous, lied and said I was still at her house. I ran to the car, and after she checked out, we both got in. My stepmother, clearly suspicious, followed us and got into her car. At this point, I was literally lying on the floor of the passenger seat as my friend drove up the road, at night with no headlights on, as my stepmother followed behind. She clearly knew something was off. We didn't even make it home before she started calling my friend's parents. Story 26. One day I sat down and realized the only reason I graduated high school was because I spent a lot of money and cheated. At my school, if you failed a class, you could retake it after school or during the summer. It cost $150 per class, the program was online, and it recycled the same 50 questions on 20 question tests. You could fail twice, write down all the questions and answers, and pass the third try easily.
I was nearly an all-A student, but mentally I just couldn't do math. I failed every math class in high school starting in 10th grade. For reference, that's one class per semester, $300 per year, and $900 in total. After cheating my way through that system, I earned my technical diploma and a certificate in drafting from a vocational school. I went straight to college and focused only on drafting courses. Then I started taking English and other general requirements. Everything was going well. Drafting grades were mostly B's, some A's, and English. Speech and science were all A's. But math, I failed. It was an algebra course. My final grade was 23.8 out of 100. I even told my job I couldn't work certain days so I could study. I retook algebra and failed again, with a 30 out of 100, somehow an improvement. Third try, I failed with a 14.2 out of 100. All I needed was to pass this one class to graduate from community college, but my GPA started to drop and I lost my Pell Grant. I broke down in tears. I can do anything, except math. I just don't have the mental capacity to understand algebra. Now I work full-time, barely supporting myself, and I live with my abusive parents. I don't know if college will let me back in, or if I'll requalify for a Pell Grant, or if trying is even worth it. I want to go back, but I don't make enough money. If I could, I'd accept the Pell Grant in a heartbeat. But after failing, I don't know if I'll get another chance. I don't know why I can't do algebra. I can do geometry, even trigonometry, but not algebra. And that was the only thing I needed to graduate. I even asked if I could substitute it with another math class. They said no. Math 098 is required. Seriously, what do I do? And if they let me back in, how do I even begin to learn algebra? Story 27. A long time ago, I used to sell marijuana, mostly to friends from school, but I also worked at a restaurant where I met a guy from a rough neighborhood who would buy a few ounces at a time. I met him in some sketchy places, but he always had the money, so I figured it was fine. One summer night, he called and asked for a quarter pound and gave me an address I hadn't been to before. When I pulled up, it was a set of nice condos, so I was caught off guard. I went in, gave him the product, and he asked for some of my premium stuff, so I took out the scale and got to work. He said he needed to meet someone outside and left. The next thing I know, the door gets kicked in, and I see at least three guns pointed at me. First thought, I'm getting shot over this. This is terrible. Immediately after, I hear, freeze, police. Second thought, I'm getting arrested over this. This is still terrible. Honestly, it all happened so fast that I just froze. I didn't move at all. The officers had to tell me to drop the product because I was still standing there, weighing it out like nothing happened. Busted, red-handed. I went to jail that night. Would not recommend. Story 28. The time I went blind at work. I'm nearsighted and wear glasses. I was at work reading an article. I was studying for a test because we didn't have any customers. And I noticed a blank spot moving across the page. It was like a tiny invisible Pac-Man was eating up all the words as I tried to read them. Then I realized it was because there was a small hole in my field of vision, and it was getting bigger. I held up my hand, and there was a hole in it. I could see straight through it. That's when I really started to panic. So I called my colleague on the other floor and asked if we could switch places for a minute. She was hungover and a bit annoyed because nothing much ever happens upstairs, so it's a chill spot if you're feeling off. I told her I needed to use the bathroom, and I think she heard the panic in my voice because she came down quickly. I said, I think I'm going blind. Something weird is happening. She didn't seem to fully believe me, but I was clearly freaking out, so I ran upstairs and locked myself in the bathroom. At this point, the hole in my vision was a few inches wide. I remember looking in the mirror and seeing my face distorted by it. Then I switched off the lights because I had a headache, and I could see strobing colored lights around the edge of the gap. Then, nothing. Darkness. Fumbling for the lights, I remember panicking. This is it. I'm blind now. How am I going to get home? I sat down on the bathroom floor and had a mini meltdown for about 10 minutes. Then slowly, my vision started to come back. Story 29. My first time navigating in dense ice, Antarctic pack ice, we got stuck and couldn't move. The nearest port was 2 weeks away, and the nearest ship maybe a week out. After trying to push back and forth for 3 hours, I started getting nervous.
I wasn't the navigator, just the communications officer, so I was observing, but it was tense. I went down to my cabin, pulled out the survival suit from behind my bunk, put on a second layer of wool, laid out my headlamp, seasickness meds, snacks, and spare glasses, and packed everything into the waterproof bag. Then I went up to the bridge. I cycled all the emergency radio batteries, made sure we had plenty of fresh spares, and set the Pelican cases out on the bridge wing. I also double-checked the chargers for the backup power banks, did a routine test on all comms equipment, and activated the Inmarsat stations. Shortly after, during dinner, the wind changed and the ice broke up. We were able to keep moving. That experience taught me that I can keep a cool head in a crisis. Knowing that has helped me get through many stressful situations since. I now work in organizing search and rescue operations at sea. Story 30. I got pulled over on a first date when I was younger. I had a suspended license and a warrant because of it. I knew what was coming as soon as I saw the officer behind us. Lights came on. I turned to the girl and said, "Well, I'm about to get arrested. If you'd like to continue this date sometime, take my wallet and come bail me out." I figured I was in trouble either way, so I just had to trust her. I handed her my wallet and waited for the inevitable. Sure enough, I was arrested. She drove my car to the station, paid the bail with my money, and then waited for hours in the front while I sat in holding getting processed. Of course, she told the entire staff that this was our first date and that I was a really nice guy. Needless to say, the guards gave me a hard time. They immediately started calling me first date. The cherry on top? The intake guards printed her a copy of my mugshot as a souvenir of our first date. I took it in stride. After 5 hours, I was released, and we went to a 24-hour diner and had a great time talking. We dated for about a month or so and eventually went our separate ways. She was a nice girl, and I still think fondly of her for being such a good sport. Story 31. My best friend and I were about 10 years old. We often went to the elementary school on weekends to skate because it had lots of cement walkways. One day we noticed the teacher's lounge. I wiggled the doorknob and it opened. This was exciting, a forbidden, adult-only place. So naturally we walked in. We didn't take anything, just looked around with curiosity. As we exited the lounge, a police car pulled up. We just about lost it. The officer asked us what we were doing, and we blurted out, "Just looking." He proceeded to get our names and phone numbers, then placed us in the back of his cruiser. By this point, we were sobbing. He left us in there and went inside the lounge to check things out. When he came back, he let us out of the car, but we weren't off the hook. He told us to go home and that he'd be calling our parents soon. We went home, and every time the phone rang, I felt like my life was over. It was awful. This went on for a few days, pure dread, until I realized he was never going to call. That officer was smart. His psychological punishment was far worse than anything my parents could have done. Story 32. I am pretty severely diabetic. Because of that, I have poor circulation and am very susceptible to infections, especially in my legs. One night we were planning to go camping the next day, which is my favorite thing in the world, and I had trouble falling asleep from the excitement. When I finally did, I only got about 2 hours of rest before waking up freezing cold and in terrible pain in my left leg. I woke my wife up because I was shivering uncontrollably. She drove me straight to the ER, and they admitted me immediately. My fever was so high I became delirious. I was fighting and growling at the nurses who were just trying to take my vitals. My wife eventually managed to calm me down enough so they could do their job. I had contracted a strep infection in my leg. If I had waited until morning to go to the hospital, I probably wouldn't have made it. I do remember before the madness really set in, thinking on the way to the hospital that this might be the flare-up that kills me. It was scary listening to my wife later describe how I lunged at the nurses when they tried to take my blood pressure, and even bit at them when they tried to take my temperature. It sounded more like rabies than a skin infection. I don't remember that night at all. Only the stories I've been told. Story 33. About 8 or 9 years ago, I was climbing an alpine rock route in Rocky Mountain National Park on a peak called Spearhead. We were 5 or 6 pitches up, about 500 to 600 feet off the ground, nearing the top, when a massive thunderhead rolled in and the sky opened up in a full downpour. My partner and I managed to find shelter beneath a decent-sized ledge for about 20 to 30 minutes. The rain wasn't letting up,
and the remaining climbing was slab style, which is not doable when wet, so we had to rappel down. Because the face was so large and the rain was so heavy, we ended up rappelling through what was essentially a massive waterfall, multiple times. We became hypothermic almost immediately. I was climbing with a woman who had made it to Hillary's Step on Everest, and even she said this was more terrifying than anything she experienced at 8,000 meters. Trying to work with ropes using frozen hands while being pummeled by water was beyond stressful. At one point, we were just one rope snag away from a very serious situation. We made it to the ground, managed to warm up, and hiked the 5 miles back to the car. Apparently, someone had seen us up there and notified a ranger who met us on the trail. We talked for a bit and ended up hiking out with him. There had been a real concern about us freezing to death up there. Any kind of vertical rescue would have taken many hours. I still climb ice and rock actively, but to this day, that's the most serious situation I've ever been in. Story 34. I'm of Greek descent and still have a summer house in the neighborhood where my father grew up. It's not in a great area, pretty rough and poor, but it's home, and I have no plans to leave anytime soon. I'd like to say that in most cases, Greeks are polite and understanding, and you almost always feel safe in Greece. About 2 years ago, my girlfriend and I went out to eat at a busy neighborhood taverna. We sat at one of three adjacent empty tables and ordered our food. After the salads came, a waiter came over and told us the table had been reserved and he needed it back. I told him we were already eating and that he'd need to figure something else out, then continued my meal. He said okay, and I thought that was the end of it. About 10 minutes later, a group of around 12, 15 to 20-year-olds showed up. One of them walked up to me and said, "This is my table, you need to get up." I told him as politely as I could that he was out of luck and that my girlfriend and I would leave after finishing our meal. Two of his friends told him to chill out and said they'd just sit at the two remaining tables. The waiter started preparing their tables while I could hear the kid and one of his friends throwing a fit. Eventually, they began to sit down, but the two guys who had an issue walked up behind me, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Take your girlfriend and leave. This is my table." I stood up to assess the situation, and all 12 surrounded me. I thought, this is about to escalate fast. The entire taverna went silent. I'm a big guy, about 6 feet 3 inches, 250 pounds. I boxed in college and still hit the gym, so normally not much shakes me. But this was overwhelming. My girlfriend took my hand and said, "Let's just go." I took 2 steps toward the street, and the one who started the mess stepped in front of me to block the exit. I saw in his eyes that he wanted a fight. I thought, if I'm getting jumped, might as well go down swinging. I wound up and hit him as hard as I could, straight in the jaw. You could hear the crack of his bones. He went out cold. I turned to brace for the rest of them, expecting the worst, but instead they just stood there staring at me. You could feel the tension in the air for about 5 seconds. Then they stepped aside and let me pass. It was the most intense 5 seconds of my life. I was sure I was about to get beaten badly, but instead I got to walk out of there like a superhero in my girlfriend's eyes. And we went home, safe and sound. Story 35. While backpacking in New Mexico, we had a longer hike than usual that day and didn't set up camp until late in the evening. We picked the campsite for its proximity to a spring, so while most of the group stayed behind to set up tents and cook, 2 of us hiked the 3 miles to the spring. The evening was cool, and it felt great to walk without our heavy packs. We strolled briskly through Mountain Lion Canyon, yes, that was actually its name, to reach the spring. It's worth noting that in this part of the Lower Rockies, backcountry rangers often carried axe handles for protection, due to how bold mountain lions could be. Our group had gone through safety training the week before. Usually when you're hiking with a large backpack, it protects you from behind, because mountain lions tend to ambush from above and behind, going for the neck. The pack blocks their target, but on this trip to the spring, we had no backpacks, just water bottles and a headlamp. As the sun dipped behind the canyon rim, we began heading back with water in tow. Suddenly, we heard loose rock cascade down a wall of the canyon behind us, about 50 feet away. We froze. My throat tightened with fear. Even before I fully understood what was happening, my body sensed it. We were being stalked. Something cracked in the shrubs. We began speaking loudly, standing back to back and slowly rotating so our one headlamp swept in a full circle. Then the light caught 2 reflective eyes,
I picked up a 10-pound stone. Not that I believed it would help, but holding something gave me a false sense of security. My brain felt primal. I was terrified. Then out of nowhere, a giant jackrabbit bolted from just 3 feet to my left. My heart exploded. My ancient survival instincts kicked in and chose what I now call the deer in headlights strategy. I froze. That rock didn't move an inch. At that point, it was clear we were no match for whatever was out there. In unspoken agreement, we ditched our slow, strategic plan and sprinted for camp with everything we had. By then, the adrenaline had been building for too long. It now powered a blistering, irrational race back through the canyon. Mountain lions be damned. 5 or 6 hours later, everyone else was asleep, except us. Our hearts were still racing, overflowing with the leftover adrenaline from a fight-or-flight response that never had a target. We never saw more than 2 glowing eyes and some suspicious sounds. Reality might have been warped by fear, but I've never felt terror like that in my life. It was surreal. The next day, we were told that rattlesnakes were actually a much bigger concern than mountain lions. Story 36. First time solo skydive. I had done many tandem jumps before, where you're strapped to an instructor, but decided it was time to go solo. I spent a good part of the day in the classroom learning about the countless ways you can mess up, from user error to equipment malfunction. After doing some drills, we took off for the skies. I'm 5'3", and at the time weighed around 98 pounds. They gave me the best equipment they had available for someone my size. It was a calm, warm, clear Southern California day. I wasn't nervous about jumping out of the plane. I was more worried about not breaking my legs on landing. Anyway, there I go barreling through the sky, free falling while a couple of instructors made sure I was positioned correctly until it was time to pull the cord and deploy the chute. If you've skydived before, you know pulling that cord is a rush. It feels like you're being yanked straight upward, but really you're just slowing the fall dramatically. I was blissful and grateful the canopy opened successfully. I finally got to enjoy the view, alone in the sky, surrounded by silence and beauty. I even noticed the stark contrast between the U.S. and Mexico border, just a few miles away. During training, the instructor had joked, "If you land in Mexico, we can't come pick you up." While steering back to the landing zone, I noticed something strange. I wasn't descending. I was stuck, just floating like a balloon. You're supposed to steer in wide circles as you descend, but I wasn't moving much at all. Between my low body weight and weather conditions, I just hovered. Time dragged on. Most jumps last only a few minutes after the exit. They gave me a walkie-talkie, but I was too high for it to work. I stayed calm, kept steering, but my arms were getting tired and my options were running out. I even considered cutting away and redeploying, but that felt worse than whatever this was. Eventually, I made enough progress to get near the airfield again. But that's when the real "I'm in trouble" moment hit. There was a prison near the airfield and I was getting way too close to it. Imagine a petite woman accidentally parachuting into a prison yard. Luckily, I landed safely. I don't remember much after that, just going home and laughing about how badly that could have gone. Story 37. I had to live in a sketchy apartment for a couple of years after leaving an ex suddenly and needing somewhere fast and cheap. The parking lot had an electronic gate.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
And was surrounded by barbed wire, but there were tons of ways to get in. Cars were broken into regularly. Thankfully, never mind. The parking lot had stairs leading down to a steel door that opened into a sketchy alleyway and into the actual apartment building. One late night after work, I walked down the stairs and noticed 2 guys in their 20s smoking something out of a 2-liter soda bottle. Not wanting to cause trouble, I kept walking past them and said, "Hey, just sneaking through, guys." I got to the door and realized they had tied it shut. I asked politely if I could get through, and one of them stood up and said, "Sure, buddy." Then he flipped open a butterfly knife. That was the moment I thought I was in serious danger. Thankfully, he smiled and used the knife to cut the rope. I walked out, but in that moment,
my entire life flashed before my eyes. Story 38. Small town Alaska. In the spring, we ride the broken up ice floes on the melting rivers. I jumped on a 50 or 60 foot long, 15 foot wide chunk of ice. We call it burging. And after a good mile and a half ride, the ice was down to about a third of its original size. As I approached an ice jam about a quarter mile long, I started looking for a stable piece of ice to jump onto before things got intense. But then, the underside of my chunk hit a rock. It bucked violently, and I was thrown backwards into the river. I hit the water and almost immediately felt the undercurrent pulling me down. I remember thinking, in a weirdly calm way, "This is a stupid way to die." I'm not exactly sure what happened next, but somehow I managed to grab the edge of the ice, pull myself up, and seal crawl across it to the shore. I've done a lot of dumb things that nearly got me killed, but that was the most serious "I should be dead" moment I've ever had. Story 39. My friends thought it would be a great idea to tumble a huge wheel off a 10-meter cliff. The messed up part was that we almost hit a teenage girl who was sitting at the bottom near a lake with her family. Luckily, the wheel missed them. Of course, they saw us and we ran so fast. I couldn't believe I could actually run that quickly. Just when we thought we were in the clear, the father came racing toward us in his car at 40 miles per hour. My mind started to go blank. I used to be the good kid, the one who didn't do stupid stuff, until that moment. They were calling the cops. At that point, I thought it was over. "I'm going to get a record. Goodbye, good life." Me and my friends had the biggest stroke of luck of all time. We waited for a good hour and the cops still didn't show up. We started to walk away from the area, and shortly after, we made a dash for it. I talked before about running fast, but this time I felt like I was Usain Bolt. I had so much adrenaline, it wasn't even funny. From that moment on, we never did anything that reckless again. Anytime we were about to do something risky, our group would always remember that one day. Story 40. So my comment will probably get buried here too, since I'm a bit late, but I felt compelled to tell the story of a day during my honeymoon. We went to Vermont. If you've never been there, just picture being in the middle of a highly wooded mountainous area with skinny roads that wind back and forth through forests and along cliffs. We hadn't had a car in about a year and a half until we were gifted a Mazda for the wedding, so my husband wasn't really in the habit of checking the gas gauge. You probably know where this is going. We're driving down one of those lovely winding roads with sharp turns that are supposed to be taken at 45 miles per hour. It's about 12:30 a.m., and the low fuel light comes on. I yelled at my wonderful new husband, "We were in town today. Why didn't you check the gas?" But it was too late. Anyone who knows Vermont knows there isn't a gas station open past 6 to 8 p.m. We drove around aimlessly. We were still about an hour from our rental home. Even though we knew the area, we still programmed the GPS to every gas station nearby. Of course, all of them were closed. We had no cell service either. At one point, with the gas gauge about half an inch past empty, we ended up on a single-lane road deep into the forest, climbing a mountain. We were sure the car would stop. And if it did, we'd either freeze out there or have to walk down that road in the dark and risk encountering wildlife. But somehow, the car kept going. I don't know if it was divine intervention or sheer luck, but it kept running until we got back onto a more regular road. We made one last attempt at finding a gas station. When that failed, we pulled over to figure out what to do. I started knocking on doors. Two homes had lights on. One woman opened the door, but as soon as I explained our situation, she looked terrified and shut it on me. So much for friendly locals.